This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. This episode is sponsored by Honda. Since its first Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix, Honda has always taken what's learned on the track and used it to build better cars for everyone. From pushing limits in F1 to engineering the next generation of hybrids like the Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid, Honda proves that racing doesn't just inspire innovation, it drives it. And that idea of taking lessons from the racetrack and applying them to road cars has always been a part of Honda's DNA. Decades of engineering in the demanding world of Formula One have helped shape the performance and efficiency you see in Honda's road cars today. And now that same thinking is shaping the next generation of hybrids as well. Cars like the 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Hybrid show that electrification can be both efficient and genuinely fun to drive. The 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid are engineered for fun. From the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Prelude and Civic and the latest innovations at Honda.com.
They don't realize smart people use smartphones, huh? Seeing through BS they thought was gonna slide. Download Text Now, cause it cuts out clownery. You can literally activate it from your couch. Nationwide 5G with the same towers the other companies use. Pay what you want or not at all. You're in control. Show these ridiculous carriers we ain't paying for stupid. Because we're way too smart to pay dumb.
Free app-based talk and text via the Text Now app requires Wi-Fi or data connection. Data plans sold separately. 5G where available.
Alex Albon reaches a major milestone in 2026 when he becomes the driver with the most race starts in Williams history.
Williams gave me my opportunity to get back onto the Formula One grid. Don't think a lot of teams would have taken that risk. I would love to stay. I think that for me, it's unfinished business. Of course, it would be lovely to win races and score podiums. And I have that desire that my time will come again. That hope is with Williams.
Here on F1 Beyond the Grid, with me, Tom Clarkson, Alex tells me what that Williams record means to him and how he's changed on and off the track since joining the team back in 2022. We also talk about Alex's relationship with teammate Carlos Sainz and whether Williams have reset their targets after a disappointing start to the new era of Formula One.
We're in this position more because we were taking a lot of risks. We want to be thinking outside the box and thinking as far ahead as we can. And I think realistically, we bit off more than we can chew. We were maybe too ambitious.
Alex, great to have you on the show again. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Not too bad. Well, we're in Monaco, so nice
home
to be
race.
Home race, very relaxed. I was thinking this is actually a good space to have an apartment. Like, this is bigger than most apartments. I might inquire how much this place is to rent, and I'm going to rent this place, and I could lease it out to Formula One.
Now, that's a business plan, a nice little side hustle for you right there. Do you know, while we're talking Monaco, you know how it normally clashes with the Indy 500?
Yes.
This year,
it clashes with another American event, the US Open Golf, where your fiance Lily is competing.
Yes.
It's in California. So what?
It is. Home tournament for her too.
Yeah, but no sleep for Alex Albon this weekend if you're going to be watching her by hole, right?
Yeah, no. That's going to be tricky. I will normally, so she will wake up around 3 p.m. our time, more or less. That's pretty much how our relationship was for 6-7 years now. So she wakes up around 3 o'clock, and then she'll pretty much start playing around the time that I'm having dinner. And then I'll watch maybe the first 4 or 5 holes, and then I do have to sleep. I'm not, I love her, but,
but I
do need to sleep.
A serious note, does it help having a professional sports person as your other half? Because you understand the pressures. And
yes. I think what I've realized growing up and spending time with more and more people, it's very interesting to see how, you know, people that have come through some sort of sporty background, when they can really empathize with the sacrifices and the hardships, the commitment that it takes to do whatever you're doing. And that can be not in a bad way, but you can notice people who don't know what that is. And it can almost be confusing in many ways to people that, but they have no fun. They're just these kind of born and bred, this is all they care about kind of thing. But with Lily, of course, she's very much on a very similar path to me. We are, it's all we've grown up doing. And it helps a lot, I think, in just general life, general conversations. When we're having our lows, having our highs, whatever it may be, you have a sounding board that resonates very closely to you. So it is very, very lucky to have that. Yeah.
Mm. Congratulations on the engagement, by the way.
Thank you.
Have you come up with a date for the big
day? I have. I won't reveal it, but I have. It will be. We're pushing on, just like Formula One. Updates and upgrades are coming every week. we're full steam ahead.
Look, while we're talking marriages, can we talk about you and Williams? Because
long marriage.
Well, you've been with the team since 2022.
Yes.
And the upcoming Spanish Grand Prix is going to be race number 96 for you, for the team, which is going to be more than any other driver in their history. How does that make you feel?
It doesn't feel fair, first of all, because we do so many races nowadays. We have something very special coming up.
For Spain?
I believe it's Spain, as I peer over to my shoulder. Manager's just absolutely focused on not that. Yes, so we are focused on something pretty cool. I won't give away too much, but I am surpassing Nigel Mansell for this milestone. And we had him in the garage in Miami. He lives out in Florida or something.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, has for years. Florida. Yeah,
for years. I had him around the garage with his family, and he's so nice. He's honestly one of the kindest. He really appreciated just us spending time with him, Carlos and me, to be fair. And it was kind of strange because it's like, no, we're the ones that want to spend time with you, kind of thing. But he was very excited. We got his kids in the car and his grandkids in the car. And it was very cool. Very cool.
I can guess what you're going to do in Spain. You're going to grow a moustache, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's got to be quite a bushy one. Are you capable?
I've got a week to grow a moustache. I can tell you right now, these genetics do not grow a moustache in a week.
But I tell you what this does show, Alex. It does show longevity and commitment from you to the team. I guess both ways, actually.
It does. You know, you think about it, that Williams gave me my opportunity back in 2022 to get back onto the Formula One grid. Don't think a lot of teams would have taken that risk, you know, considering I did have a tough final year at Red Bull. And then throughout these, how many years is that now? I should know, but 5 years. Just being able to align. Obviously, every year we've grown as a team. We've got better and better. Clearly, this year has been a bit more of a struggle. But being honest with you, I really do enjoy, you know, racing for this team. The board members involved in Dorilton and everyone over in the States and the UK, it's a very friendly place and very personable people. And I really enjoy their time.
Do you think you are now the archetypal Williams driver?
I think I'm most probably part of the transition of us going forwards in terms of, I spent 1 year without JV. So it was back then it was Yost Capito, and we were just starting this turnover. I think that's really when, you know, Doriton were investing heavily within Williams. And each year we've gone through, you see the factory now, you see all the buildings and the technology coming through, the machines, whatever it may be. You see all the personnel coming through. We've increased size massively since when I first joined. It is really, really impressive.
How different is the atmosphere at Williams now compared to 22? Do you feel there's an inner confidence now that wasn't there?
Yeah, I remember distinctively my first couple of weeks visiting the factory in 2022. And there were so many things where it was like, you came from a time at Red Bull where there was clearly a very winning mentality going on. And then when you go to Williams, it wasn't the people within the factory that you felt were, you know, weren't good enough. It was purely the culture, the confidence within the team that was almost like they had a very tough few years. And each year, I think at that point, they were going backwards. And there was that, you know, just it's that feeling just like any single human would feel if they were, you know, feeling like they were going backwards. It was just a bit of a grind. And the team that I see now, what's funny is, you know, we are on the back foot this year. There's no secret. You know, we are at the moment the ninth team, but we've been the ninth team in 2022, 2023. But that desire to be like, this is not where we belong. We don't belong here. We belong, you know, back to where we were last year, at least, you know, this kind of P5 in the Constructors' Championship it's there. There's determination to get back as quickly as we can. That's a completely different mindset, if you think about it, to what it was like when I was first there.
But do you understand why you're where you are now?
As in why we're on the back foot this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And if you actually look at it, I think we're in this position more for completely different reasons than we were a few years ago. We're in this position more because we were taking a lot of risks. We want to be thinking outside the box and thinking as far ahead as we can. And I think realistically, what ended up happening were we bit off more than we can chew. And so there were some areas within the factory, within the team that we didn't foresee. And we created bottlenecks, procedural things that just, especially when you change your regulation and there's so much to do, it was a lot easier before when we were just refining the car and just making a car faster and faster. This was a lot more, you know, deep into development phases. We were late. We pushed things right as late as we could, and that just put us to where we are. So it's not for the same reasons of we're just slow. It was actually more the opposite of we were maybe too ambitious.
Given everything you've just said and the recruitment drive that the team is on at the moment, there's a recent signing that I think sounds really significant, and that's Piers Thin, who was in charge of the factory at McLaren. You know, he won the most recent Constructors' Championship in Formula One, and he's now joining Williams in a couple of months' time. That strikes me as quite a big shout from Williams, given the reasons you've just stated for the problems this year.
It is. If you strip everything away and you just look at what do the top four teams do better than everyone else, their turnover speeds, the fact that they're bringing upgrades almost every race, even if it's a small upgrade, how quickly they can convert CFD and wind tunnel production into physical parts, their turnover is extremely quick. And it's one of the big things that separate midfield teams to the top teams. And we realized, you know, I think it's no secret, a few years ago we were back on the Excel spreadsheets and whatnot, and we were quite far behind, and we've got this huge gap to bridge. Bridge to gap to bridge.
So
we'll do both. And that's one of the areas that we've noticed consistently, and kind of touching on a new regulation change. That's one of the areas where we saw ourselves most exposed. So
right, and what about extricating yourselves from the hole at the start of the year? We all know that the car was overweight.
I mean, overweight in itself is a function of being late. You know, it's being slow because the one of the quickest things to gain back time and get back on target is to not crash test, to not refine, to just get parts on the car as quickly as you can and miss out that weight saving opportunity phase of the car build. So it all kind of leads a lot of it to efficiency.
But how much can you recover this year, given the processes that you now have back in Grove?
I'm fairly confident we can get back on weight by, don't want to say when, but I think we've got a clear plan. It's you could imagine that it's at one of the very top priority lists of the car.
And if you're on the weight limit, is the performance there? Is P5 in the Constructors' Championship still doable?
We have a calculation of where we know our car would be if it was on the weight limit. That's not to say that everyone is on the weight limit. They aren't. But
can you share that?
No, but I would say that clearly the results aren't where they would be. We'd be much more in the points than we are now. The good thing is you've seen maybe the last few races an uptick in performance from the team. And, you know, there are some upgrades happening on the car, but a lot of that is the weight getting stripped out.
And how much of a setback was the groundhog moment that you had in Montreal? Because, I mean, it actually cost a lot of money, the amount of damage that was done.
That was an engine gearbox.
I've heard like $1 million being floated around. Yeah. I mean, that in the budget cap era, that's
budget cap
huge.
Era is maybe quite overlooked in terms of didn't matter too much if you banged a wheel or two, lost a front wing or two previously. And now, especially with being the first year of this regulation change, how much money that takes to invest in the car, you don't want to be spending it on crashed parts. So yeah, it's not fun. I don't think the insurance covers groundhogs. So yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. This episode is sponsored by Honda. Since its first Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix, Honda has always taken what's learned on the track and used it to build better cars for everyone. From pushing limits in F1 to engineering the next generation of hybrids like the Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid, Honda proves that racing doesn't just inspire innovation, it drives it. And that idea of taking lessons from the racetrack and applying them to road cars has always been a part of Honda's DNA. Decades of engineering in the demanding world of Formula One have helped shape the performance and efficiency you see in Honda's road cars today. And now that same thinking is shaping the next generation of hybrids as well. Cars like the 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Hybrid show that electrification can be both efficient and genuinely fun to drive. The 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid are engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Prelude and Civic and the latest innovations at honda.com.
We've discussed the team and how it's getting back on track. Let's discuss you now, Alex. The driver silly season is up and running. We've just had Charles Leclerc announcing a new contract at Ferrari. Where are you at with Williams? Do you want to stay? I mean, James Vowles has said he wants you and Carlos for the future. Are you on the same page?
I would love to stay. I think that for me, I've been a part of this journey before JB, in fact. And, I've been here feeling like maybe it's true or not, but I've been a contribution to part of the success of the team. And I want to see it through. I want to see where we get to. I feel like there's unfinished business where we are. And this year was actually tough in many ways, even just mentally, because you kind of... just seeing this forwards momentum going through, and now we're slightly having to reset kind of where our trajectory curve is, but in a way, yes, you know, there's areas that we realize, okay, well, this is going to take a couple more years than we would like, let's say. And so you know, as much as you want to immediately get a pen to paper, you do want to see where and how the team evolve. And I think for me, it's 100%. As I said before, I love the board. I love JV. I think the team is in a great place. So I want to see this work.
James has said 2030 is when he wants to see Williams challenging for world championships. First of all, do you think that date is doable?
Yeah, I would have said, you know, previous to the end of last year, my eyes were kind of, you know, 28, 29, 28 really. It was kind of like, I thought, if we keep going, that's not too long away. I think from this year, it's kind of gone, okay, you know, it's most likely more 2030. I think that's realistic. I think one thing about JV is he is honest, and he doesn't try to set unrealistic targets. I do think that 2030 is I haven't spoken to him about it, but I do I believe it's a good number, yeah.
And he has said that you and Carlos is the best driver lineup in Formula One. You're now 18 months into that relationship. How are you rubbing along?
Yeah, great. I think we are still in a very similar place to the first weekend we spent together. There's no difference in our openness. And most probably more than anything, we've realized we were very open before in terms of what do we need to do to get this team to go forwards. And then this year, being on that back foot, there's been even more focus. I'd say there's been a huge amount of driver input back to the factory. And yeah, just between us trying to understand how to make this car go faster. So I like the way that we have this partnership. I'm not sure it's that common across teams to have two drivers with experience that understand the picture of what the team needs or what team need to get to go forwards. Not to say that young drivers are going to just focus on themselves, but it's nice that we can have these weekends, even, for example, FP1s, where we can do completely different things across cars to focus on different philosophies and see if things can work out. Neither car really focusing on pure performance, just trying to figure out what the window is of the car and then kind of come back together, right? I could imagine there are a lot of midfield teams that wouldn't do that.
Do you think that dynamic would change if you were fighting for podiums and wins? What sort of personalities?
I think so, yes. Yeah. I think it would, but we're not there yet. So that's a problem to have later on.
And Carlos as a teammate, has he made you a better driver? Do you look at his data, his telemetry and think, okay,
I do. I'd say that I look at it. I don't, I think he would say the same to me. There's nothing that I see that's, you know, you feel like you cannot do or whatever. I think we kind of look at each other, we bounce off each other. I think he's taken to these new regulations well. So it's been helpful for me to see his data.
What does he do especially well in a racing car?
I would say that his strongest asset is actually his feedback and his communication. It's actually the outer car work that he does that's very good. I think he speaks well. He has great insight. He has an engineering brain on him. I think that's really important.
Are you quite similar?
We are similar for sure. I think that we both attack, or we go into a weekend and prepare for a weekend in a very similar way. Maybe that's also why we get on well.
Yeah. Well, beginning of next year, you'll be starting your 150th Grand Prix.
Yeah.
it seems quite a lot, doesn't it?
I know. I always think of it like I'm 30 now. I turned 30 in between China and Japan.
Your fourth decade. Wow.
Yeah. A 30 is crazy.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm way over the average age now.
Yeah, you're an old boy now. God. Although Jackie Stewart would tell you are absolutely at your prime at 30 as a racing driver.
And actually JV says the same thing. But I'm glad Checo and Valtteri joined the grid to get that average age up a bit. Yeah.
Lewis, otherwise, stay around a bit longer.
Yeah, otherwise it would have
Fernando, we need you.
Yeah. Everyone stay. It's helped my ego.
Yeah. Can we explore how you think you've changed as a driver over the last 8 years?
I think there's if I split it between the two, so if I go just purely driver, pure technique-wise, my driver default is the same. So I drive the same way. I have the same technique, same style.
Are you faster now?
I've noticed my weaknesses more. So I know the corners that I need to work on. There's obviously a consistent pattern that you kind of go through. I know the tires much better. I know how to manage the tires in a race much, much better. I know when to push. I think that's the biggest difference between when you start to where I am now, is that balance of saving. And then when you start picking up that pace and start going for it. On a technical level, I understand the cars better, clearly. And I pretty much know how to, and I know all the things we can do to the car. And then in terms of a personable level, I'd say there's still the racing side, which is mostly the area that I think I've become better at, is the being that team person, that point of contact of moving the team or explaining to the team what I needed from them, from the car. What do we need to go back to the factory and work on? What are these specific areas that we need to focus on? Having better communication, basically, and knowing who I need to speak to get what I want from the car, from the team. And then there's the outside kind of non-racing side, but it still applies, is me as a human, is I'm more confident now, more confident and comfortable in my own skin as well. Not trying to be someone I'm not, and more relaxed as well in weekends.
Do you think you being thrust into that team leadership role, you know, when you had Logan Sargeant, when you had Nicholas Latifi as your teammate, were you ready for that? And is that what helped create the person that you've just described?
I think it definitely was a part of it. I think it was more an element of maturity as well. I think that there's a big difference mentally that changes when you are driving to survive and then driving to not survive, basically. And the attitude is that self-confidence within you that's kind of like, I'm okay. I don't need, it's not all about me. And it's kind of what I was saying before around, you know, having that two experienced drivers in the midfield. And it's more about, what do we need as a team to go forwards? How do we get away from these P12s and P13s? And how do we start moving into the points? And there's a, I guess, a human reaction towards, I belong here and I don't need to prove myself. And so you do think far more big picture, and that kind of narrow-minded approach of in it for myself goes away. So that's possibly the biggest difference.
So when you were finishing in the points in what, 7 of the opening 8 races last year?
Yeah.
That was peak Alex. That was...
It was peak Alex for sure. In many ways, things were clicking and you're just relaxed. I think there's an element of the car's good. You're just in that rhythm. It's hard to explain, but there's none of this kind of like, I got to do this. Even, it sounds really silly, but I mean, this is maybe going a little bit off subject, but you know how different it is to be able to go into Q1 and it doesn't have to be the perfect lap to get through. You can play around with your tools. You can play around with the front wing. You can play around with your outlap because it doesn't really matter. You're still going to go through. The mentality of, I can't adjust too much and I need to make sure my outlap's perfect. And it's a bit of a weird mentality, but sometimes harder to take risks when you're on the back foot, when you know the car's not good enough for Q2. So it is a shift in many ways. And I think it makes you more relaxed. You know you've got a good car behind.
And do you think you would deal with a team like Red Bull differently now? The Alex, the version of you now, would deal with that opportunity differently now?
You for sure, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean...
deal with helmet.
I look at myself... Yeah, yeah. I look at myself back when I was in Red Bull to where I am now. And I think I am very, very different. Still have my core is still the same, but how I can deal with things. And the biggest thing is get myself out of things. You know, if I'm in a tight spot or whatever and things aren't clicking, how do I get myself out of them? That's the biggest thing. When I was at Red Bull, with that maturity and the lack of fundamental engineering knowledge, it was hard to know why it was difficult.
What do you know now that you wish you had known in 2019 when you started in Formula One?
It's so technically boring. There are things you can do with the car, like things which I most probably didn't understand back then, but the way you can set up the car and play around with it, there's a lot you can do, basically. And I think that sometimes I was not giving the exact feedback that I should have been giving, because back then it was just, it's doing this, it's doing that. I wasn't in the detail of understanding why. I think some drivers don't like that, though. So to explain, it's like some drivers are just quick. There's not really a thought behind it. They just drive anything they get given. That's great. And that's actually a nice thing to have. If I can understand what makes the car click and why is it doing that, if I can understand that, I can also get the lap time out of it. It's almost like, okay, I need to understand the language of the car. Once I get that, then I can unlock it. And so back then at Red Bull, I would say I was far from that.
But that's experience. That surely every young driver is the same. Even Max Verstappen, the 2016 version of Max Verstappen, surely was the same.
Exactly that. You can even say you sit with Kimi this year. There's that learning part of it where you're just driving. And I think as a mentality, you're kind of just reacting to whatever you get, you have underneath you. Once you start going away from reacting to being proactive and being able to say, I want the car to do this, I need this, rather than this is what we've got, you know, can you drive around these issues or these issues, you gain lap time.
This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Building a great team is never easy. If you're a small business, hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Because when you're hiring, you don't just want more applicants, you want the right applicants. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's because it helps you reach candidates that meet your specific criteria, such as skills, certifications, or location from the word go, boosting your job post in search results so you can reach the people that help your business thrive. So spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all of your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs.
I think there are three phases to an F1 driver, just from years of observing. One is the reacting phase that you talk about when you first come in. You just come in and do it. And you're often very successful at that because you don't overthink it. Then you've been around. Phase two is you've been around for a while. Suddenly you realize the privileged position you're in and you start to, drivers start to overthink it. And sometimes it doesn't come so easy. And then you get into phase three, which I feel where you are, where suddenly you understand it all now and there's less pressure and then it ramps up again. So you sort of bookended by high performances with a slightly...
You're onto something there. I think every driver, if you look at it, they've kind of gone through that phase. You look at even like a Max, a George, a Charles now, a Lando now, and it's hard to see it from the outside, but I really do believe everyone's just getting better and better. It might not be pure lap time and pure driving, but if you understand the cars more, you understand the tires more, you understand the tracks more, you understand how these things work more, you become faster and faster.
What about incremental gains from a driving perspective, right? You've talked about all the tools you have in the car. How hard do you think about things that you can do? And something I'm reminded of.
It's a real, real balance.
So Nico Rosberg, 2016, didn't paint his helmet because he was going to save 80 grams of weight high up in the car. He gave up cycling because he wanted to get rid of the leg muscle to save weight. You know, that's the sort of...
I think Nico was extreme,
But do you think constantly about where you can make gains like that? Or are you at the point now where I've got nothing more in that department? This is me.
I think every driver will have this. There's a relentless desire to be better. And I think a lot of drivers in different ways are motivated by multiple ways. I think I saw Jensen, you did a podcast with Jensen and talking about, I think every driver has a level of insecurity that drives them forward, that because you don't feel like, you know, are you the best? Can you be the best? I'll do everything to be the best. And you go through and you look at every single part of you to improve. For me, recently in the last 2 years, a lot of that's been, I feel better driving a lot of different things. Like I think Max does that naturally, driving GT3 cars and whatnot. For me, a lot of it's spent driving different cars. I did some rallying up in Seattle the other day, driving random cars around Sonoma, going around in go-karts, just doing everything. Feeling like just driving and getting that feeling is really important. The other side of it, though, is kind of, with balance, because it really is balance, is overthinking the sport and just driving. Like, I think a lot of it is, there's all these things you can focus on and do to try to improve. But then once you get to the racetrack itself, you need to disconnect and just kind of be in that quietness and just, you know, this is it now. You've done all that prep work. You've done all the whatever you feel like you needed to do. And once you're there, it's the fine details of driving the car as quickly as you can.
Damon Hill says the best race he ever drove, Suzuka 94, he wasn't thinking, it was just happening.
Yeah, it's the sweet spot.
It's the sweet spot.
And I'll say this, I think that this year it's been much harder to be in that area mentally because it's so much more going on to the cars this year than there were in previous years.
Like, you can't disengage in the way that you want to.
You have been taught at an early age to just drive corners as quickly as you can, but there's a layer this year that's different. And I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm not trying to say the regulations are, you know, unique, but you can do different things which you never did before to go faster. So there's this thing in the back, which is the battery, that you can manipulate. And it's interesting because just driving, being in that quiet space, can sometimes be not efficient. And so for me especially, a lot of work in a simulator is spent driving to try to make that bit feel quiet so that it's not dominating your thoughts as you're going around the lap.
And that will come with experience.
The more, exactly that. Like, even from Melbourne to now, your mind quietens down a lot, at least for me. And I think I'm excited to compare. For example, I just did the sim prep for Monaco and then I moved on to do Barcelona. We don't go back to the UK in between the two races, at least I don't. And suddenly all the deployment comes in and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about this. Need to go back to that style of driving again. It's very interesting.
In terms of getting in the zone, is that circuit dependent? Do you believe that drivers have favorite circuits, favorite corners even?
Yes. And I think that when you're really feeling like you're driving at your very best, it's very similar to what Damon says. For me, you just know. Like, that corner, can't explain it, but I just know. I know that's how you take that corner. I know how you take this corner. There are some corners which naturally you're like, I'll try this, I'll try that. Does this work? Yeah, it's okay, but okay, I'm going to try a little bit of this. Okay, can my tools help me? Can we help with the setup? Okay, you know, I need to brake a bit later here, like 2 meters later here. Just these, they're small, and we do them a lot, but it's just these little small things, and it's like, it's not, I do this kind of thing. And for me, when it's, I do this, I feel
tell
like...
Tell me a corner where you just do this. So I can go and stand there and watch you.
Okay, good question.
Anyway, even if it's one we've already done.
I'm trying to think of one that we can go to soon. What's after Barcelona?
Austria. Silverstone?
Silverstone's a great one. Silverstone. Okay,
what is... Give me an just do it corner for Alex.
Turn 9.
Is that Cops?
Super high... Yeah,
that's Cops.
Cops. So like Cops, you can go in there and you spend a couple of laps understanding the wind. Once you understand what the wind's doing,
you just do it.
Every driver has it. I'm sure of it. Every driver has corners where no teammate can ever beat them because they're just in that.
And Cops for you. Look, this might sound like a silly question, but given that, you know, footballers have a favoured foot, tennis players a favoured, you know, backhand forehand.
Yeah.
Do you prefer turning left or right?
I did.
Are you better turning left or right?
I asked the team to do a statistic for me on it just to see if I did have a preference, but I don't.
You don't have a preference?
No.
Is that a silly question?
No, it's not. I've realized, like, I think I'm slightly better at optimizing the track when it turns right. So I can get, you know, you kind of got your tarmac, you got your white line, and then you got the grass. And when I turn right, generally speaking, I can get the tires overhanging on the tarmac, on the white line, but not in the grass. That's me turning right. And then when I turn left, I'll watch an onboard in FP1 and I'll be like, there's a bit, the left hand is, there's a little, there'll be a little bit.
I think it's right hander.
But normally, I still go pretty well there. But yes, I think there's a bit there.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Look, final topic I just wanted to ask you about was, you've grown up and beaten so many of the guys who are winning in Formula One now.
Long time ago, though.
Long line, junior formulas. But, you know, it's a lot of that is equipment related in F1, isn't it? I'm thinking of George, I'm thinking of Lando. How do you view the success that those guys are having now?
Fully deserved, to be honest with you. I think that I had my chance at Red Bull, was a bit young at the time, and maybe would have benefited from a little bit more time, you know, still in a midfield team and building my toolbox for a top team. But I feel a lot of gratitude in what I do. I feel very thankful that I did get a second opportunity. And I feel that, yes, of course, it would be lovely to win races and score podiums. And I have that desire still to do that. But it's not me looking over my shoulder being envious of my colleagues. It's very much desire that my time will come again, that I get a chance back at a top team. And of course, that hope is with Williams. I think my goal this year was to get my first podium for Williams. That was said last year. I felt like I was close a few times. But in that, the chance will come again. It might take a year or two more, though.
Well, look, Alex, best of luck with everything that
comes.
Thank
you very much.
And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm sure that first podium with Williams will come, Alex. You just might have to wait a little bit longer than planned. The team is laying the foundations for future success, and as you know only too well, the path to the top in Formula One is never linear. I always enjoy talking to Alex. He's thoughtful, he's engaging, and he's witty. And I love how our conversations always go off on tangents. And who knew that drivers do seem to have a favoured corner direction? Alex, thanks for your time. Go well, and I'll see you very soon. Well, that's almost it for this week. Before I go, please remember to check out F1's other official podcasts, F1 Nation's review of the Monaco Grand Prix with myself, Laura Windsor and Lawrence Barreto is out now. We discuss whether Kimi Antonelli is a generational talent after his fifth win in a row, and what's next for George Russell after losing more ground in the title fight. And this week's episode of F1 Explains is all about the race start procedure. That will be on the F1 Nation feed this Friday. Thanks very much for listening. I will, of course, be back next week with another big name from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out. This episode is sponsored by Honda. Since its first Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix, Honda has always taken what's learned on the track and used it to build better cars for everyone. From pushing limits in F1 to engineering the next generation of hybrids like the Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid, Honda proves that racing doesn't just inspire innovation, it drives it. And that idea of taking lessons from the racetrack and applying them to road cars has always been a part of Honda's DNA. Decades of engineering in the demanding world of Formula One have helped shape the performance and efficiency you see in Honda's road cars today. And now that same thinking is shaping the next generation of hybrids as well. Cars like the 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Hybrid show that electrification can be both efficient and genuinely fun to drive. The 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid are engineered for fun. From the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Prelude and Civic and the latest innovations at Honda.com.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.